Can Alabama take away the run game and make Georgia one-dimensional like Kentucky did? And if they do that, Beck's going to have to be great. All right, welcome back into week five of college football. This is going to be a good one, man. We got a huge showdown with college football implications. Obviously, Georgia versus Bama. The rivalry continues. New cast of characters, obviously. A new coach with Saban being gone. This has been Georgia's thorn in the flesh. This has been Georgia's, you know, sole weakness over the last several years, even though when you say that, we got to keep in mind Georgia's got as many losses too as national in the last three seasons as they do national championships. But Brent, new scheme, new regime, Kalen DeBoer starting it off. I think we start with Alabama, we start with Georgia because this matchup is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal game. And it's just, I think that's when you look at the schedule for the entirety of the year, and we've talked about this before about the playoff being Georgia and a lot of people on Georgia's schedule. It starts this weekend, and it starts with them playing against a quarterback that beat them the last time they played.
And talked a little trash afterwards.
Yeah. And one that you look at the cast of characters is definitely different. No Burton, no Bond, in terms of playmakers on defense for Alabama, those are gone. No Bowers, no Ladd. Like there's a lot of different characters, but still at the core, it's still the biggest game in college football.
Yeah, it is. And I think when you look at this matchup, it's interesting to me. Jalen Milroe is a guy that makes everybody around him better because he has the ability to hit the home run. He has the ability to make the big play. And so the way you play him has to be different than every other quarterback you play in college football. A lot of guys, you're like, oh, I want to heat him up. I want to hit him. And sometimes it's risk-reward whether you heat up Jalen Milroe or not. And I find this very interesting. If you go back and watch last year's game, they heated him up a lot. They wanted him to get rid of the football. The problem is when you heat him up, what he can do after the fact. And he can scramble around and he can make plays. So Georgia blitzed almost 50% of the time last year. I expect absolutely more of the same. I expect them, because they want him to throw the football. Jalen Milroe is still a work in progress throwing the football. But the way they use him, Brent, and we got some tape, which I think is cool if we want to show it now. Like the way they use him, they hide those deficiencies and they maximize who Jalen Milroe is. And they make you defend one play or two plays or three plays on one play. And that's the part that's difficult. First of all, when you're setting up any defense, it starts with him. Look, when they get in the red zone area, you'll see a lot of quarterback run. And what do? You got trips to the formation. So now you've got condensed splits. So if I play man up top with those three guys together, you can run a lot of crossing routes. You can pick. You can make it very, very difficult on me. So you want to play some sort of a zone. And then if you play in zone, look at the leverage they create. And watch this with down blocks. And Brent, I think we ran this in youth league football a time or two.
Yes. Give the best athlete the ball and let him go do things.
Yeah. And he is. And by the way, his coast mode at 80% is faster than most people's 100. So you watch Jalen Milroe. He is like, chill, cool as a cucumber. I'm good when I need to hit the gas. But here's how he makes you defend one play. By the way, we're going to show you one play several different times. But if you watch the guy on the right side of your screen, number four, if you want to put the little arrow on him on the right side, the defensive end,
right there.
You go. Watch what he has to do now. You got a guy coming across the formation. You got a running back going downhill. Pause it. Okay? So his gap is getting the running back downhill. When this guy comes in motion across the formation, he's got to get inside of him. He's got a player. Look, you can see the player outside of him already on the screen. So that's his job, is to force the ball outside. Well, now watch what you do when you got Jalen Milroe. Okay, I don't even touch you. I didn't block you. My quarterback's ability to run the football and just outrun people, I pick up 10, 15 yards like that, Brent. So guess what? I'm a defensive end. And you know what I'm going to do? Stop. Okay, 17, look on the left side of your screen. You ain't getting me again, bro. Like, I know number four is ridiculous. He is so fast. If I squeeze too far inside, he's got the corner. Now watch what it forces you to do. It forces you to slow down. Look at the running lanes. First of all, go back a little bit, Brent. I want to point out, we talk about Alabama and the physicality. Who are they knocking off the football? This is the scary part. Not a dang person. Watch.
Yeah.
Knocking people off the football. Wisconsin is playing in the backfield and you still lose because we're basically zone blocking everybody one direction and we're reading you and making you be wrong. And the running backs benefit greatly. It is the same exact play you just saw. Like, that is so frustrating as a defense. All right, stop. Guess what? We got to the same formation. But what do, Brent? A little bit of motion.
Yeah.
Right? A little bit of motion to go, wait. You don't see what we're doing. Hide it. Bring him in motion. And it becomes the same type of action again. That split zone action. And you see the defensive end comes down the formation. Jalen Milroe pulls it and just eats it up so easy.
And the corner tries to do a little bit of something and just is just like, nah.
Well, and that's what you don't realize. He's 215, 220 pounds. Like, he's a big, strong. And this will be where the game is decided. You're in the red zone. How do you get your best player the football? You already saw it one time to start this clip and how it was empty and you made it do it. Well, now watch this. Everything about this says stop. Okay. So it's the same action we've seen, right? So now the running back's coming downhill, but now watch. Everybody plays aggressive downhill and he pulls it out and they run ISO. Basically QB ISO. Like, it's so much variation, but it's so easy because he's so dynamic. And that's the task that Georgia has. So to me, Brent, who's got to be great? Like, who's got to step up and make things very difficult on them?
It's one player who actually didn't play a lot in the SEC championship game to me. It's Jalen Walker, who's made splash plays this season, played 12 snaps in the SEC championship game. And in those 12 snaps, by the way, had 5 quarterback pressures and 2 sacks, like, in 12 snaps.
So that's,
he's going to see the field a lot more.
Like, that's, I'm not good at math, Brent, but that seems like a guy that might should have played a few more snaps.
Yes.
Well, and he's the one guy, when you watch Georgia over the years, it's always been so much physicality in the defensive line. And you had Jalen Carter, but Jordan Davis was physical. Nolan Smith was physical. Like, those guys were really physical. And he's the one guy with severe twitch. Like, on both sides. And that's another thing about Alabama. Alabama doesn't have that defender now that I think scares the pee out of you like they've had in the past with so much twitch. Like, that he's in the backfield getting to you before you even think about it, like with Will Anderson, like with Dallas Turner. I think those guys were game wreckers, whether they wanted to or not. And so Jalen Walker is that guy. But I'll tell you what, I'll be curious to see Carson Beck, because the Carson Beck that I've seen so far this season is not the Carson Beck that I saw last year. And you say, well, no crap, Ladd McConkey's gone. No crap, Brock Bowers, one of the best players in Georgia football history, is gone. So they have to run the football, Brent. Like, Jalen Milroe can run the football himself. They don't have to be great in the passing game or dynamic, and they can still win the football game. You should see the numbers of when Georgia can't run the football and they can't. So if you can't run the football and play action becomes nullified and they're just a drop back team, that's not Georgia's style. It's not where they thrive and flourish the most. So can Alabama take away the run game and make Georgia one-dimensional like Kentucky did? And if they do that, like, Beck's going to have to be great. And Beck's going to have to be great when he moves his feet, because Alabama knows that. So what you'll see is outside rushers rush inside, push him outside the pocket, and make him move his feet and reset. And when he resets, he becomes human. The cape comes off, and he's not as accurate.
I think you're going to see a lot more early down play action from Georgia early in the game. And because, like, watching Beck – this year, the dichotomy of him is he's so risk averse and processes things to me so quickly that it's at the sort of detriment of plays that are down the field, because he's off of one, on to two, off of two, on to three. Like, and there's plays down the field if he would just be a little more patient. And I think play action actually forces him to be more patient.
Well, and he anticipates so well, Brent. Like, that is one of his superhero powers. Like, he throws the ball. If you watch college football, there's not a lot of guys that get the ball out of his hand before a guy breaks. Like, you watch the NFL, it's all over the place and you're littered with it. But he does an unbelievable job of anticipation. But let's be honest, wide receivers out wide got to win too. And Arian Smith is going to be a guy that I feel like is going to have to win. Oscar Delp is going to have to give you something in the pass game. So I think it's a lot of guys on the outside for Georgia. Like, who's going to be the guy? Like, who's going to be the guy that steps up and makes plays? Because Bowers did it. McConkey did it consistently. And by the way, Brent, both of them banged up in last year's SEC championship game.
Right.
They weren't healthy. Alabama took advantage of it, made Carson Beck look a little bit more human. And can they do it again at home? Like, hardest thing in college football, I will repeat to you, is to win on the road. Georgia's got a lot to prove in this football game. And the narrative of every Georgia fan is, thank goodness Nick Saban left. Saban was 5-1 against Kirby. You got a chance to set the tone with Caleb DeBoer. Like, set the tone with recruiting. You got a chance to make a statement and say, the big bad wolf is gone. Like, use the clips from a year ago of Jalen Milroe saying, we knew they weren't ready for a fourth quarter game. Like, everything in the arsenal, and Georgia's going to have to play their best.
Play bad your last game.
Yeah, they're going to have to play their best game by far to beat Alabama.
Yep. So, in the end, toss up. Who makes the fewest mistakes? I think kind of.
I think it's a toss up. I think it's who makes the fewer mistakes. But I think Alabama is afforded more of an opportunity to make less mistakes when you have a quarterback that you can consistently run and beat you in a multitude of ways. We didn't even talk about Ryan Williams and throwing the ball down the field. Like, right. He's elite at that. He's not elite at throwing the ball over the middle of the field. Like, it's going to take a great game from Georgia. And I don't know. I don't think Alabama's secondary or defense, is elite like it's been. There's not a guy. There's not guys that stand out as much. And I'd say, what about Georgia? Ingram Dawkins, like, that dude, 93 has popped. He has popped on tape. Like, he's definitely taken that next step in becoming not just a guy. He is a dude. And so Georgia's going to have to play elite like they did on defense last year, and you're going to have to force some mistakes. But Alabama at home, again, it's going to be a tough ask.
I haven't picked Georgia to lose since 2019 against LSU. I don't know. I think I still have another day. I still have another day or two to go back and forth either way, because I'm still wishy-washy on that very much so. Another big game on Saturday night, Happy Valley, Illinois coming off its big win in Nebraska, going to Penn State. What do you think there?
Oh, man. First of all, you don't want to play at Penn State. That's an elite environment, elite, like really, really fun to watch. Illinois proved to me against Nebraska, by the way, that they can run the football, they can be balanced, and they can continue to play clean. They keep playing clean. Like, Altmaier, 10 touchdowns, 0 interceptions on the season. Like, the sticks move, 4 touchdowns last week. Like, he's really, really good. They're really efficient. And I think here's what I want to know. Colton Ecky came over from Kansas last year as their OC and is now running the offense for Penn State. What are we? Is this the Penn State offense we've seen for years and years and years? Or are they better? Can they throw the football down the field, make big plays? One more thing I think to look at in this matchup too for Penn State, pass rush. Dude, it's been next.
Where's it been?
It's been next freak up for Penn State for years. It's like, Oh, Chop Robinson. Okay. Oh, Micah Parsons. Oh, like, who's the next guy up front that can put, because you're watching the Bowling Green and you're like, they've got all day to throw, making big plays in the back end. Yeah. Obviously, they got it together, but I think this is going to be exceptionally close. Penn State's at home. I think Illinois more battle tested. Illinois has a quarterback they can trust. Drew Aller has a big opportunity to show me and make me a believer. And then you're starting to talk about another. This is a ranked. It could be a ranked win for Penn State. A good opportunity game, because down the road, when you're doing resume tests, they've always been right there in that mix of 1 through 12. Yeah. So this is a big game for Penn State. I like Penn State at home.
I agree with that. And it'll be interesting to see two former Georgia corners, AJ Harris and Jalen Kimber, via Florida for Kimber, getting to go against Pat Bryant and Franklin for Illinois. That'll be a fun matchup to watch, because those guys, Harris specifically, have been playing really well. All right, another game. We got to talk about Notre Dame because they get Louisville coming to them. Is this a loser leave town match for Notre Dame kind of thing in terms of that playoff discussion?
100%. They lose, they're out. Still got USC at the end of the year, but they will not have enough on the schedule, and they don't play in a championship game. So I think this is huge for Notre Dame. Listen, they're one of the worst passing offenses in the country. If you watch Louisville against Georgia Tech, the one thing I learned about Louisville, extremely physical, extremely good up front, and they stop the run. Like, I think they've got an elite corner. I think it's McKinnon on the outside who's elite of elite. He's a dude. He can shut down one side of the field. I think Louisville's really, really good. I don't see a ton of great yet. I think they're still growing into themselves. Remember, that was only game three last week, but they showed me something against Georgia Tech, scored a non-offensive touchdown, you know, blocking a field goal, taking it back. Brian Brohm, I'm going to continue to give credit because the dude is a superstar. Like, he's a great play caller, and Shutt's going to make big plays, you know, consistently down the field. But here's the thing. Notre Dame don't give up big plays. And if you're going to get Notre Dame, you're going to have balance. Louisville has balance so far. I think I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to take Louisville. I think it's super close. I think it's 24-21. But the thing that throws me off with watching Notre Dame is their pass game. I just don't. I don't think it's good. I mean, I think it's suspect, and I just don't think you're going to line up and pound Louisville. And so I think they're going to have to make plays in the passing game, and I'm just not sure I've seen enough yet to believe they're going to do it.
Riley Leonard, 231 yards and 5 touchdowns in the last 2 weeks, rushing, not throwing, not sort of average and throws and anything like that.
And he's going to have to make plays. Like once you get down the schedule, he's going to have to start making more plays.
I think I'm going to go flip side with that. I think Notre Dame gets that in that type of score just because we invariably have to talk about Notre Dame at the end of the season and whether or not they're going to be a part of the playoff picture. And I think that has to happen.
Right. Another reason why I like Louisville, last year Notre Dame had a great rushing attack, a better offensive line. Notre Dame's offensive line is banged up. And last year, Louisville, they ran for 81 yards against them. And that's why they beat them, 81 yards. I think Louisville can handle this rushing attack. And now the QB run game is better now, but the offensive line has taken several steps back. The dynamic passing game for Louisville, I don't see it. So I think it's a close one, though. And then Notre Dame at home, but I'll take Louisville.
All right. So obviously there was some news, interesting news today that the UNLV quarterback, Matthew Sluka, I think. Is that how you say
God bless
it? I'm probably butchering that very much so. But basically said, I'm redshirting and I'm done. And there's things that weren't promised and whatnot. So thoughts, what you got? I haven't been able to read as much as I could, but I will say nothing at this point shocked me.
No, it doesn't shock me. And remember, this is a business, and in this business, this is going to happen because they can promise you anything they want. But until they give you anything, it doesn't really matter. And here's the thing about NIL. There's a lot of parents and family members that are negotiating deals for your kids. And because, by the way, it's what I would do. If I was in this situation, I'd go, Dad, I don't know what to do. Help me out. Help. And when you promise something and you don't deliver, this is a business. And here's the thing, Brent. I would love to say, this sucks. The kids should play. UNLV is going to be a team that's looking for by the way, they could get in the playoffs. And it's because of him. It's his running and throwing. Like, he is the team.
Making plays.
Leading rusher, leading passer. Like, the dude's an animal. He's a really, really good football player. But how many of y'all would show up to work if somebody didn't pay you what they said they were going to pay you? That's all I got to say, Brent. Are you showing up to PFF again and be like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to do all this scouting for you and all this work for you. Hey, UGA, I'm going to do the film Don't Lie, and I'm going to put in all these hours. But we can't pay you. Like, this is going to be more of a part of college football. Is there any other ones that's out in personal?
I mean, I think I saw the backup running back maybe as well. And then you got Barry Alexander.
This way. There's going to be, if it's not released yet, Brent, there will be another high profile name, a much bigger name that has already transferred once that will be doing the exact same thing.
Like, so you're not talking about Bear, are you? Bear Alexander? Yes. That, I mean, he's kind of thrown that out there a little bit.
I think it's going to happen with Bear Alexander. He's going to redshirt. And guess what? He got money once from USC. Now he gets to go in the transfer portal again if he's graduated and do the same exact thing and maximize on the business that is college football. Listen, this is the ugly part, okay? This is the part that when you don't legislate your sport and your sport doesn't have guardrails and it doesn't have somebody who runs this place and runs this system and doesn't have clear-cut parameters, this is what you're going to get. And that's why we need a president of college football. We need a players' rep union. You need to do all these things and put all these things in place to represent and the business side of this that it is. By the way, profit sharing is here. Like, revenue sharing, excuse me. Like, all this stuff is a part of it. Ticket sales now going to players. I mean, this is a business, and they're going to have to treat it accordingly because this is not the last time you're going to see this.
No, and when you mess with people's money, It can get a little crazy.
I just want to ask y'all out there if you're going to work when they don't pay you. And every single one of y'all's answers are like, L to the no.
All right, so back to actual football, because I think that's way more fun to talk about. We got some other good games, sneaky good games, maybe even upset alerts. We got bounce back, OK State, going to Kansas State. You got sort of, is there anything there? Colorado at UCF. What did you think of Hunter at the end of the game and Shadur for Colorado making plays?
Like, it's better to be lucky than good sometimes, you know? And they got lucky, and they got a huge break in Colorado. But, I mean, do we still see the lack of pass protection for Shadur? Yes. Do we still see Shadur trying to make big plays, holding onto the football too long? Yes. Now, the one thing I'll say about Colorado when I watch their defense from week one with North Dakota State to last week, it's better against the run. It's more physical. I like that. It appears to me to be more gap sound. And when I say that, that means they're in the right spots more often. And that's a good thing. So if that can continue, because here's another thing too. RJ Harvey at UCF, that dude can tote it. Like, I think he has the most rush yards per game in all of college football. So they're going to be tested, you know, Colorado up front. And then Shadur, can they protect him? Because he's sacked on, like, he's got 17 sacks already. One of the top sack quarterback in the country, pressured one third of the time. He drops back. So I think this is a fun one, though. But if you go to the Big 12, that's more fun to me. Who do you got, Oklahoma State or K-State?
K-State at home. I think that's a different animal. I think them going to BYU was not really – it was a snowball effect, because that place is a different animal at night. Big 12 after dark now.
I thought we learned a lot too about Oklahoma State. And when I watched their offense, man, they have no balance. And Bowman got benched at one point in the football game, by the way. And they're looking for some kind of spark offensively. I just don't trust Oklahoma State's offense. And here's the thing. Here's the weird thing about the 38-9 loss by Kansas State. They rushed the ball for over 200 yards. They made big plays in the running game, but they couldn't score. And, you know, they don't turn the football over very often. They had three. I don't think Kansas State puts back-to-back games together like that. I think Kansas State wins. And by the way, this is a huge game in college football, because whoever wins this football game will have a chance to be in the Big 12 championship, which no matter what they're ranked, they'll have a good chance to punch their ticket to go to the playoff. So, you know, this is a huge
one. Getting to that game.
It's a huge one in the Big 12.
Couple home big favorites. Friday night, Miami hosts Virginia Tech. Saturday, Ole Miss gets Kentucky. Either one of those get frisky, sneaky good, or is that both of those guys taking care of business?
I think they'll take care of business, but I'm interested. Like, listen, we have not seen Ole Miss play anybody with a pulse. Like, at least I know Kentucky's a physical, prideful football team. I don't think they're elite, but I think at least they might make Jackson Dart play a little bit better and execute a little bit more. But I just – Kentucky can't score. I mean, but can anybody hold down this Ole Miss offense? It hasn't been held down yet. And I'd love to see that in this contest. But again, I don't think it's – I don't think it's trouble for anybody. I think both take care of business. I think both win. But, I mean, shoot, when do we finally find out something about Ole Miss? I think it'll be down the road a little bit when they're 6-0, 7-0.
Yeah, you got a few more weeks before that happens. The interesting thing about Miami, they had four top 40 recruits, and three of which were five-star guys. And I haven't followed exactly, but looking at how much impact those guys have had, combined, they've played 100 snaps. So that to me tells you, and three of those guys were defensive linemen. So it tells you that Miami actually has depth, and the talent that's behind who's playing currently for them is high end talent. So that bodes well to me for them moving forward throughout the season if they start getting some level of production from those guys and some playmaking.
And listen, I don't know a lot about Miami yet because of their schedule, but the one thing I'll say about Miami that I'm 100% sure of is they have one of the best rosters in college football. And whether you want to admit that or not, and whether you've seen or not, and it's the depth, it's the physicality, it's the playmakers at the right spot, it's how they run their offense, which they're basically going to run Martinez downhill, let him pick a hole, and they're going to be physical and nasty. And I mean, I enjoy that. Like, Cristobal's got a good temperament. If you ever spend time with him, like, he's a freaking offensive lineman. Like, that's what he is. And
good dudes.
He's just a dude. Yeah. And so I tell you what, Miami's going to slowly creep up and you're going to look up and you're like, ah, like they're three, like they're four in the country. And then they're going to have a chance to get a bye, and they're going to have a chance to be in this playoff for sure. I think they're getting in. And don't forget, Cam Ward will have a chance to win the Heisman. I mean, he's just, yep. He's a guy, he's a dude, man. Like when you watch him, he's got that swag. He's like a Miami guy back in the day that you used to watch and you're like, oh my God, I love this cat. You know, like,
cause we're running here. That was fun to see.
But and what Brent's talking about, he was pointing exactly where they were running on the goal line because he was against USF and he's like, we're running right here. Like, hold on. Did you hear me? You got me? Okay, right here. And then turns around, hands the ball off, and they score a touchdown. So
that's a confident dude.
It's the Miami train is real. It's coming, and it's not stopping anytime soon.
Last sneaky good game. Washington State, 4-0, at Boise State, who's in the top 25. But this actually has, like, legitimate playoff, big-time implications.
And by the way, that's why the 12-team playoff is fun, because this game actually does have playoff implications. Oklahoma State, Kansas State does have playoff implications. Like, most of the time, we're chasing the playoffs, which, by the way, football's awesome regardless if the guys are playing for the playoffs. Like, just tune in. It's really fun. It's great regardless. But that definitely carries a little bit more weight. And listen, I'm not convinced Ginty's not going to be in this race for the Heisman, for gosh sakes. Like, he has been he's been unreal, Brent. Like, and he did it against Oregon. Like, and he's putting up big numbers. He's a workhorse. Like, you watch two for Boise State. Like, he's a man-child. I mean, he is really, really good. And UNLV, by the way, just – I think they're out now. Like, they're done. They just lost their leading rusher, their leading passer. They're in trouble. And so –
that guy's playing for Washington State. His name's John Mateer. Like, and he's doing a lot of good stuff for Washington State, which, by the way, who I think will be favored in every game they play the remainder of the year.
And that's – by the way – I haven't even thought about that because the two-pack is so small, but it's growing by the day. And what that what would happen if Washington State ran the table and was undefeated? I don't think it will happen, but it
makes it interesting.
That'll be a great game. And college football always delivers. And we'll do more of this in the future. By the way, guys, we'll do more tape breakdowns as the season goes along, and let you see kind of just thought processes, different things, and how people are playing and how people are executing. And if you like us, again, we'd love to see you subscribe, keep bringing good content to you. And if you don't, we'll kick rocks. It's all good. We'll go away. But we'll go away and we'll come right back next week with some recaps and talking more college football.